came and knelt before Jesus and said, "My daughter has just died, but come and put your hand on her and she will live." So this, like, it gives me a window into what it means to request a miracle of life change. Because requesting a miracle of life change is actually a crazy thing to ask for. What he actually says is, "My daughter has already died. Can you make her alive again?" Right? At first, the request is simple. She's sick. She needs help. Can you come and work on this before it's too late? Can you fix this problem before it's too late? But then, it's too late. She has died. It is already too late, but Jesus, can you do it anyway? That's a crazy thing to ask for. Requesting a miracle of life change in people around us is not a simple thing. If we're really going to ask for transformation, if we're really going to make a habit of asking for dead things to come back to life, we need to realize how crazy that ask actually is. Because most of us stop short of the crazy request. Most of us will ask when it seems like there's a potential for something to change yet, but we'll stop short when it moves to the point of too late. Most of us will ask for help from Jesus when the situation feels bad, but as soon as it feels impossible, we walk away. "Don't bother the teacher anymore," they say. "It's too late," they say. And we listen, and we stop asking, and we miss a miracle of resurrection. Most of us tend to believe that there is a moment where it's too late for anything to change. So I don't know if you have a college student in your life, maybe one that's starting college this week, right? Or maybe you have a junior or senior who's starting to think about this process of like, okay, where am I going to go to college? I did student ministry for about 15 years, and in my experience with student ministry, I'd often get into these really tense conversations with high school seniors who are desperately trying to figure out where I'm going to go to college. This is like this one life-changing decision that will completely set the trajectory for who I'm going to be as an adult, and we stick it in the lap of a 17 or 18-year-old and say, good luck, right? So, of course, they're a little bit stressed. But as I listen, even this year, as I listen to people in my life who are in college, they have this anxiety, what if I make the wrong choice? I got these two schools, I got these two options, I got these three schools, whatever it might be. I was with a friend this week, and they made 12 college visits to 12 different colleges, right? And it was really intense for them, because what if I make the wrong choice? What if I do it wrong? What if I start my college career at the wrong school? And as parents, and those of us who've been through some of this stuff, we know that it's probably never too late. You can always transfer. You can always go to somewhere else. Many of us started out on a path and we ended up somewhere we never would have expected it. So we have a lot less anxiety about that. But for that 17 or 18-year-old, there's a moment where it becomes too late. We often get worried about making the decision before it's too late. Too late is a big thing for us as people. But it's not for God. She's already dead. Will you do something anyway, Jesus? I had hoped you had come before it's too late, and now it's too late, but will you help anyway? This is way outside of my control. I see no way around this, Jesus, but will you help anyway? When we make this kind of habit of requesting miracles of life change, it has to consistently remind us that we are not in control. That the things we are asking for are so far out of our control that God takes us to places that we can't go on our own. So creating this habit, creating a practical habit of requesting for miracles of life change around us is a reminder about our own limitations, but it's also a reminder of what God can and will do around us, even though we think it's impossible or we think it's just too late. So to ask, to request, it's not so simple. It's complicated. It's crazy. It causes us to think more about what God can do than we can ever even imagine. But let's keep reading in the story in verse 50. So they come and say, "Stop bothering the teacher. It's too late. She's already died." Hearing this, Jesus says to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just believe, and she'll be healed." When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except for Peter, John, and James, and the child's mother, or father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She's not dead. She's just asleep." Which, again, seems like a crazy thing to say. But look at the difference between how Jesus is interacting in this situation and how everybody else is interacting in this situation, because it's very similar to how we interact when things feel too late, right? We say, "Don't bother God with this. It's already over. It's already too late." We focus on our fear. We focus on what's sad. We cry. We mourn. We despair. Wailing is a great image of what it looks like when we think things are dying or have died in our life and that we can't get around it. That's what we do. We do the same thing. But Jesus focuses on something else completely, right? While we're focusing on fear, Jesus is focusing on hope. In his perspective, he's like, just knock it off, right? There's still hope. She's not dead. This is something's going to happen that's going to blow your mind. Stop focusing on what you think is going to happen and allow me to focus on what could happen. And then in verse 53, look at how they react to Jesus' perspective on hope. They laughed at him, knowing she was dead. I mean, hold on for a minute. This is like the only time in the Bible where this kind of situation happens. People are laughing in the face of Jesus Christ. A man that up until this point they've seen do other miracles, right? And Jesus is like, "Well, I'm Jesus, so let me step in here a moment and let me see if I can handle this situation." And they laugh in his face. That's a powerful image, isn't it? When we stop short of making that miracle request, right? That request for life change, that thing that seems so impossible, I wonder if we consider we may just be laughing in the face of Jesus at how ridiculous we think his plan might be. Like, "I'm so smart, I've got it all figured out," that, "Well, Jesus, I know you're Jesus and all. I know you're the Son of God. I know you can raise human beings from the dead, but I've got a really clear view on this situation." That's what makes our prayers for life change so ridiculous, right? Is that we don't believe it'll work, that we don't believe it can happen. But what's amazing is Jesus doesn't need us to. They're laughing at him, and he doesn't need them to shape up. He doesn't need them to turn around. He doesn't need them to think any different. He doesn't need us to earn a miracle by thinking hard enough or believing good enough. Laugh in his face all you want. Jesus does it anyway. It doesn't stop Jesus from acting. And I know that you have dead things in your life too. You have a perspective on those dead things. You name them to be too late. Something is dead, and I'm at a loss for it to ever change. And I get that. I have those things too. I have relationships in my life that have literally ended in a conflict, and we've never spoken since. I've got habits in my marriage that I come back to again and again and again that I feel like I don't have any control over fixing that. I'm royally screwing up my children very specifically and uniquely as only I can, right? And I'm convinced that they're never going to recover from what my parenting is doing to them. I feel plenty powerless to change what's happening around me. But what I can do is I can make a habit of requesting for a crazy miracle, even if I totally don't believe it'll work. I can make a habit of saying, "God, that thing needs to get raised from the dead, and I just want to ask you to do it, even though I have no idea what that'll look like." And when we make that habit, it reminds us of who's really in control. It reminds us that God is a God who wants to see dead things live again, and it reminds us that he doesn't need my help to figure it all out. But it also doesn't all happen at once. Look at the next verse in the story in verse 54. "But he took her by the hand and said, 'My child, get up.' Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to get her something to eat. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened." So here's the thing that I notice about this miracle, this huge enormous, crazy miracle of life change where dead things came to life is that, man, resurrection didn't happen all at once, right? She took one step. She got up. She needed to eat something to get her strength back, right? The miracle was simply that she got up, not that she ran a marathon, right? Not that she was floating in the air. One step at a time, Jesus takes her by the hand, and the first step is to get up. It reminds me of this incredible athlete named Tim Don. Tim Don is this incredible world championship triathlete, and 2 days before the world championships in 2017, he was hit by a car while riding his bike, and he suffered a real significant fracture in his neck. And he's this top-level athlete who can swim, who can bike, who can run faster and longer than any of us can, right? And the doctors had to act quickly and perform a risky surgery to save him by working and doing surgery on his neck. To just get him to be back to normal, healthy again, let alone swim, bike, and run faster than any of us can. And most folks simply want to recover on that, but Tim wanted to get back to training and racing and get back to the thing that he loves, and eventually he did. This month, actually, he finally got an all clear where he can go back to the World Championships in October and race again. But it didn't happen all at once. There's this great documentary on Netflix where it shows how this guy spent months in a halo brace, and he had to start by getting up, and then he had to learn how to take some steps. Then he had to get on the exercise bike and bike a little bit, all with this sort of halo brace on. He didn't jump off the bed and jump into a race the next day. His transformation took one step at a time. And the story shows us that when dead things come back to life, it can take time. It can take steps. And perhaps the miracle of life change that you are praying for, that you're requesting, your role may simply be persistence. Persistence, to continue to put that up before Jesus one step at a time, to keep praying one step at a time, to have patience, to keep noticing, to keep reflecting and recognizing what God is up to, and to keep requesting that he brings things back from the dead. The good news is it's worth noting how Jesus did that as he took her by the hand. It's a very personal moment. When we're experiencing these moments of transformation, it's not alone. We don't do it alone. Jesus takes us by the hand. It's an intimate, personal experience. And we don't always recognize the steps that we're taking that are leading us there. We might just need to realize that Jesus is reaching out his hand, asking, inviting one step at a time. God cares about his people. God cares about bringing dead things back to life. And I want to encourage you to be part of that process. It doesn't happen just outside of us. We can be part of the miracle of life change around us. Step one is to recognize what God might want to bring back to life. That's the first thing, right? We recognize step one. Step two is we do this crazy thing of requesting that God change something. To challenge when we think it's too late, or to what's in our control and what's out of control, but to keep requesting for one step at a time. So today I want to give you two practical ways of engaging this reality around us. One is for the miracle of life change that God wants to do inside of you. And the other is for the miracle that God wants to do around you. Because I think we need both of those things happening. So first, the resurrection inside of you. I'm not sure exactly what you feel like there is something inside of you that God might want to bring back to life. I'm sure that if you spend time reflecting and recognizing what's in there, you'll know it pretty quick. You'll find exactly what you need to request, what you need to ask for. But here's the thing I know about how God works in these miracles, is that he uses relationships. He uses other people. He uses other voices. So if you are looking for something inside of you to come back to life, I want to encourage you to pursue four voices, four relationships in your life that'll help take that one step at a time. And the first is the spiritual voice. This first voice is the voice that helps us ask faith questions. Right? It's pastors, it's spiritual directors, it's prayer warriors, as people in our lives whose job it is to not give us advice. Their job is to help you stand back and ask the kind of questions Jesus asks. Do you believe that God can do something? Where do you see God in this? What is God saying to you? What do you think God is up to in these moments? The spiritual voice, their job is to help us stand back and reflect on what God might be up to. And if you don't have anyone around you that is reminding you that God is a God who brings dead things back to life, you deserve to have that conversation in your life. I'd love to have it with you. Any of our staff or our leaders would love to have that conversation with you. If you don't have anyone to have that kind of conversation, if you're looking for something to change in your life and you need help being reminded of what God might be up to, let's talk. Let's set up a time to do that. Whether it's a pastor, whether it's a spiritual director, or anybody else in your life, who is helping you ask faith questions? That spiritual voice, that's the first one. The second voice is the practical voice. It's the voice that helps ask us practical questions. These are the counselors in our life. Their job is to give you advice, right? When you've got something all tied up in a knot, and I do, I got all kinds of things tied up in the emotional baggage of my life, right? Maybe you don't, but I have a ton of it, right? They help you untie it. They help you focus on the little edge of the string and pull it a little bit at a time until the knot starts to unravel. And maybe you don't have a counselor, maybe you never thought of that. I do, and they're really good at that, right? They're really good. There are people who know how to help you take one step at a time and make some practical things. It's not crazy people who see counselors. It's crazy people who would watch their emotional world crumble around them without asking for help. So we need a practical voice in our life, whether that's a counselor or someone else who can speak and help us ask practical questions that matters. The third voice is the experienced voice. It's the voice of someone who helps you see beyond today. Because when we need dead things to come back to life, we're often stuck at the funeral. We're often stuck in that moment and we can't see around it. So we need someone who has walked ahead of us, who's gone where we've been and who's made it out the other side. Their job is to remind you that hope is possible. That this is the thing that you can get through. That I'm walking a few steps ahead beyond where you are, and let me tell you what's over here on the other side, and you can make it. Mentors, coaches, people who've been there before. You don't even need to personally know these voices. You can get podcasts, you can watch YouTube videos, you can read books of people who've been where you are and have made it through the other side. Their job is to give you hope that you can find resurrection. Find a story of a person who's been where you are and who's made it the other side. They survived the affair. They've gotten clean. They came through the other side. We need an experienced voice to give us that hope. And the fourth and the final voice is the encouraging voice. It's the voice of someone who's just there to cheer you on. You deserve a community. You deserve friends. You deserve people whose job it is to walk alongside of you, right next to you, say, I have no expertise to offer in this situation whatsoever. I've never been here before. I'm not even particularly smart, but I love you and I'm cheering you on. We need encouraging voices around us. We need people who aren't there to fix anything. They're just there to remind you that you matter and that you can take another step. Many of us find those voices, whether it's in groups here at our church, missional communities, or even in women's ministry. If you need a encouraging voice around you, I'd encourage you to step in those directions and see what you could find. But if you are a person who says, I need to see something dead inside my life come back to life, I need a resurrection, God often works through other voices in our life. And I would encourage you to pursue these four voices. Take a picture of the screen if you need to remind you. Say, how do I encourage these four voices in my life? When I'm in a place where I recognize something is dead and it needs to come back to life, that God might want to transform, I find these four voices are usually what God uses to resurrect something. So that's the resurrection inside of you, what might be going on inside of you, this miracle that God may want to bring out of you. Now let's talk about the transformation around you. Because I hope and I pray that we are a church that isn't just looking inside of ourselves or up to God, but that we are looking outward to what's happening around us, and that we are often asking God for miracles of transformation in people, in communities, in neighborhoods all around us. So the simple practical step to see miracles of life change happen around us is that we start requesting those. We start asking for those, to ask for crazy things to happen around us. So on your chairs today, I gave you a little card, a little 3x5 card. It's not fancy, right? This isn't fancy work. This is normal work, right? It's not for school supplies for later this week. It's for this process right here. And it's a tool that I want to give you two steps to use to help you practice this habit. And the first step is to simply write down three things, right? Write down three things that God could resurrect around you. Jesus has three miracles of resurrection in the Gospels, so why don't we stick with that? Three things that if you spent time and you recognized, you looked, you reflected around you, you would say, I think God might have something more for that. Maybe it's a relative. There's somebody in our life that, we often prayed a lot for, that God would remove a spirit of bitterness and instead replace with spirit of joy. And man, it took a long time, but God did those things. Maybe it's a situation down the street from you or something happening at work or in your school or in your classroom, or I don't know what it is, but what is happening around you? Three miracles that you could start to recognize. Three big, crazy, don't make any sense requests that you could write down on your card. 1, 2, 3. That's step one. Step two, really simple. Make a daily habit of requesting God's help. Make a daily habit. Stick this in the mirror, in your car, in your bathroom, or wherever you see it, at the breakfast table, somewhere where you can say, all right, I'm just going to make an ask. It doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to have some magical belief. You don't have to achieve some high level of spirituality. You don't even need to be a good person or even a Christian to ask for a miracle of life change to happen. All you have to do is ask. You can laugh in Jesus' face and still ask, and he still will respond. God cares enough about us and the world around us to bring dead things to life, and that is a crazy thing, but we get to be part of that process. So whether you're doing that internally or around you, I'd encourage you to leave this place today and ask, God, what do you want to bring back to life? Jairus was a synagogue ruler. That's how they sort of characterized him, which means he had influence. He probably had means. He seems like an important guy. By all accounts, this guy probably was someone that people looked up to and seemed like he had it all together, that he had it all under control. But for all he had, for all of his resources, for all the things that were in his control, he couldn't bring dead things back to life. He needed help. And so do we. So let's be a people who make it a habit of asking for that help, of requesting God to do the thing that he loves to do, to bring dead things back to life. Will you pray with me? God, it is a crazy thing that's the way you work. It's crazy that you use us to be part of that process. There's so many ways in which you could do whatever you want in this world around us, but God, you're a God who loves us enough to see dead things come back to life, and you invite us to be part of that process with you. So God, I pray for our hearts. I pray for the things inside of us that we feel like are too late to change, that we feel like are already in the ground. We've already had the funeral and we've just accepted that this will never be any different. God, I pray that you crack us open a little bit, that you soften our hearts, that you open our eyes to something that might change. And God, would you give us the courage to pursue some voices around us that can help move us in that direction? And God, I pray for what's happening around us. We leave this place on a Sunday morning and head into a million different other worlds and homes and places and relationships. And God, there is hard stuff and dead things happening all around us. Would you open our eyes to those as well? Would you help us recognize what you may want to bring back from the dead? God, would you give us the crazy courage to ask for a specific crazy resurrection miracle? Would you remind us of that every single day, that we can come to you and that we can learn that you've got a much bigger plan for us than we do for ourselves. God, thanks for this day to be together and to be reminded of how big you are and how much you love us. In your son's name we pray. Amen.